Athletic.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to the Business of Government Hour, a conversation about management with a government executive who is changing the way government does business. The Business of Government Hour is produced by the IBM Center for the Business of Government, which was created in 1998 to encourage discussion and research into new approaches to improving government effectiveness. You can find out more about the center by visiting us on the web at businessofgovernment.org. And now, the Business of Government Hour.
Welcome to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host and managing editor of the Business of Government magazine. The provision of health services is a critical and significant mission within each branch of the U.S. military, as well as an integral part of the U.S. Department of Defense's military health system. MHS works to ensure that the total military force is medically ready to deploy and that the medical force is ready to deliver health care anytime, anywhere. This is no small feat considering the demands placed upon MHS are varied and many. These demands encompass increasing the readiness of service personnel, enhancing the experience of care, improving population health, and maximizing limited resources across the MHS enterprise. To meet these demands head-on involves leveraging innovation and advances in technology that are clinically relevant, technically feasible, and financially viable. How is the MHS creating an environment built on innovative technologies? What is the MHS doing to cultivate controlled innovation that supports the delivery of healthcare? How is the MHS facilitating synchronization across its technology portfolio? And what is being done to advance the development of interoperable health IT systems across DOD and the Department of Veterans Affairs? We will explore these questions and so much more with a very special guest, Mark Googe, Chief Technology Officer at the U.S. Department of Defense's Military Health System. Mark, welcome to the show. It's great to have you.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
So, Mark, I'd like to kick off our conversation with some context. Would you provide us with a brief overview of the history, mission, and continued evolution of DOD's health affairs, and in particular, the military health system?
Sure. The MHS was spawned out of the need for centralized medicine, better care, really around World War II time frame, which came to strength as we were looking at a lot of our injured, ill and wounded, and their families, and a whole view coming back from direct combat support. So from that, the MHS was really spawned to really help the Army, Navy, and Air Force and Coast Guard members engaged in combat operations, provide a holistic view of healthcare and healthcare needs for them. And it's gotten even more as we get into more collaborative or joint ventures that we have, and the transformation to our next evolution with Defense Healthcare Agency, something that the Secretary has looked at that. So we've got members looking at how could we do it better and more efficiently for our customers and those entrusted to our care to deliver better outcomes and health care in a proactive and reactive manner.
And sort of that's been the impetus for creating the office that you now lead. Would you give us a brief overview of the history and evolving mission of the Office of Chief Technology Officer within MHS? What was the genesis of the office?
Sure. Back in 2010 the NDA report 716 came to the department to look at really the MHS as a whole, and to look and do maps and gaps of any areas that they saw that needed some refinement, again, to help us deliver better care and to be more from our fiduciary and from our clinical responsibilities. From that, one of the gaps was a need for a technologist integration area. So the CTO was stood up in 2010 to bridge between the technical aspects of how we enable missions to be accomplished to the business requirements, so we can satisfy that with an IT enabling capability in a manner that's not only allows us to look at the mission threads that are unique for the Army, Navy, and Air Force, but to look at the enterprise as well. So when we capture that data, that we have an enterprise effect of that data as we look at our very transient population, that we capture that data in the most efficient manner so we can put the right data to the right person at the right time. And so that's really my kind of role is to serve as that bridge between our business or functional communities to that of IT-enabling technologists, so we can have a big city planning kind of organization.
So with that kind of a mission, an enterprise-wide mission, could you tell us how your office is organized and how many folks do you have helping you out?
So we really have a kind of a slim staff, but some of the best, right? So I think no more than 15 people inside the CTO's organization. I have a lieutenant colonel who helps with our innovation and mobile. So we're starting to develop those strategies for how we look at innovation, how we look at mobile solutions, how we align mobile solutions with the larger Department of Defense and with those people on the outside. So personal health record for our customers, so they can download the information on one of their mobile media devices to take with them to the next, you know, care setting. So whether it's inside the four walls of our facilities or outside to some of our managed care partners, how do we transcribe that data both internally and externally for our patients? I have another cell that does we call dynamic business capability mapping to apply the science of tangible evidence-based to sequencing and investments across a broad spectrum that is very complex, that encompasses a lot of organizations, a lot of pieces. So we really took a lot of the motion out of that by looking at, you know, what's best for the business, what hits the requirements, as that's a driver force for our HIT innovation, is requirements drive. So what are we doing to satisfy the technical, the clinical, and the financial aspects of that, to bring those three pieces together to look at a methodology as we do city planning to sequence on investments to hit not only the near term, today, tomorrow, and in the future where we want to be. And so that's how we kind of evolved the office to break that out in some of those cells.
Yeah, I'd like to understand the idea of a chief technology officer, but more particularly, it's a new phenomenon, relatively new phenomenon in the public sector. And I was wondering, how does it fit within MHS, and what is your role exactly? What's your day-to-day like?
Hectic. that's my day-to-day life. But really, it's become the advisor to the CIO and to the stakeholders that I support. So I fundamentally see myself supporting all those men and women, right, that really deliver the direct care, whether it's the business applications or it's the direct clinical applications, to provide a foundational element of support and understanding of how we do that. So I put together packages, courses of action, recommendations based upon the best technical enabling capability to allow us to meet, again, today's demands and to grow into tomorrow's without having to do a refactoring of that technology, to provide some of those architectural frameworks that allows us to have standard and interoperability not only today inside, but tomorrow with our direct care partners or those who we're sharing information with.
So leading an office that has the tension between today and tomorrow, anticipating tomorrow, and innovations that are going to help you realize success in the future, what are your top three challenges that you face, and how have you sought to really address them?
Sure. Top challenges, really, as you can imagine, a lot of communication and coordination. We stand up some governance boards, allow us to do that. We have an engineering control board, an architectural compliance board, and a portfolio board to look at the financial aspects of that. So new ideas and or projects come through those boards for the CIO. So again, we can deem more evidence-based decisions to put better courses of action or recommendations to our senior leaders to allow that to happen. The second one really is just the messaging, getting the message out to our stakeholders, whether they're at an MTF in Launchtool or they're, you know, right here in the National Capital Region, consistency of messaging and really what we're going and what we're doing. We use that through what we call long-range technical architecture and planning. So we do the 1, 3, and 5. And then we kind of look a little bit more in the future to the 7 to 8 years of really where HIT is, because we wouldn't saw genomics on the screen, you know, applying drugs to certain, you know, genes and what we make up as human beings. But now it's in our space, right? So that's and then how do I deal with what kind of systems do I use to exchange that data? What kind of, right, FDA compliance do we need to have to really start, again, leading forward so we can do more genomics and genomic mapping on drug and drug therapies? So that's a big one for our space, I think, now that we're getting more involved with our clinical counterparts about how the requirements need to be transcribed to an IT capability. But the LRA, really back to that one, allows all of our services and all those components that do business with us to really have the seat at the table as we plan this as a whole, as a village, right? So we can ensure that we are not only meeting the unique mission of each service, but that we have compliance into the enterprise level. And that's kind of mine first is, you know, the joint first architecture is one of our HIT principles, our health information technology principles, is that really joint first has to be the way. Because, you know, when you start building stuff in silos, you know, where we were at, you know, about a few years ago, and we're doing the transformation now, it's all about the data, right? To the right data to the right person at the right time to make a decision on that. And so that's really helped us a lot to do that. And we do that on a yearly basis to see where we've been, how we measure where we've been, where we're going, and do we meet the missions and objectives that we laid forward on that map. So it's an evolving roadmap to where we want to be. And it could change with strategic directions from our senior stakeholders or from those that directed us from the Hill or anything else, right, or the White House, to take on different challenges and different unique packages that we, the MHS, experience, unlike any other organization. So it's very, very good, and it really helps visualize where we want to be and codify the mission that we're going to hit and the objectives we want to achieve.
Well, actually, we've had this conversation. I'd be remiss in not asking you, could you give us the definition or the distinction between a chief technology officer and a chief information officer? How are they different? It doesn't have to be a long response. It's just give us a sense of the difference.
So I think the applied space between a CIO and a CTO, I think the CIO is really more focused on the policies and the governance to the business that allows execution of technology to happen. And then the CTO is that applied science space where, you know, he or she looks at what's in the portfolio, what needs to be satisfied, what are the policies and rules and regulations allow us to orchestrate these enabling capabilities out there to meet the business objectives and quantify that. And so, I mean, you see a lot of the CIOs have a lot of, especially in our space, Title 40, Clear Cohen, right? A lot of compliance for funding being spent on IT to ensure that those meet the requirements they're destined for. And then how do you measure and monitor that for compliancy? And then how's that really organizationally, that person is kind of, I see, as spokesman or spokeswoman for where we're going and how do we do that. So really my LRA with him or her helps shape kind of the future for how we would deliver products and services from an IT standpoint and how that would sequence and the investment inside the portfolio.
So Mark, given your career and your experience, what in your mind are characteristics of an effective leader and who's influenced your leadership style?
Sure. So influence is really a lot of my naval time. Again, I had the pleasure of serving as a U.S. Navy corpsman, right? Couldn't ask for a better job and a more humbling service to have. And from that, you have a lot of very caring people in there. And so one of my strengths that I took on from my leaders was the ability to humble yourself, right? To put yourself into another person's shoes. And you see that a lot with patient interaction, right? So it's one thing to be standing beside the bed. It's another thing to be in the bed. And so that paradigm really helps you kind of shift about what's really important to you. So I think listening and understanding and trying to put yourself in those shoes is a great leadership point of view, and to be able to do that. And so, like I said, had the unique opportunity to serve in that clinical role. So I really understand our doctors a lot better and what some of their challenges are with, right, what grand rounds and other things that really proliferates the care at facilities that is the day-to-day bread and butter of what we do. And so that's been a good one for me. And, you know, the Navy is the honor, courage, commitment, and caring for our Navy core values. And so that really helps to take this along. So I think that's one, to be able to communicate efficiently and effectively, to be able to really paint through words the visualization of where you want to be, and to, again, understand that not everybody understands technology, and to be able to translate that into, you know, lowest common denominator in which that makes sense to people. Because, you know, you can talk about flux capacitor and lithium crystals all day, but people just get the glared eye. But if you can't translate that, then you're really not an efficient leader, and you're probably not, in my opinion, a SME in your field, a subject matter expert, because you should be able to say myocardial infraction equals heart attack. Well, people understand heart attack, right? But MI, probably not so much. And so I think that ability to communicate, and paint really the future, and then have the understanding from those people that you're in the position because you've checked the boxes, and not just that you were put up there, that you've earned the spot to be there. I think that alone says a lot about leadership.
How is MHS creating an environment built on innovative technologies? We will ask Mark Googe, Chief Technology Officer at the U.S. Department of Defense's Military Health System, when our conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour. How can we enhance national competitiveness? What about getting big things done in government? And how can government better manage risks and use resources more wisely? Pick up the latest edition of the Business of Government magazine and find out. Hear from Comptroller General Gene Dodaro, SSA Commissioner Michael Astrew, Coast Guard Commandant Admiral Robert Papp, NGA Director Tish Long, and Aaron Connaughton on the Air Force's strategic vision. All of this and so much more in the latest edition of the Business of Government magazine. Order your free copy at businessofgovernment.org. Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host, and our guest today is Mark Googe, Chief Technology Officer at the U.S. Department of Defense's Military Health System. So, Mark, you've done a wonderful job of explaining the global span and reach of the military health system and the importance of getting information and health services anywhere, anytime. I'd like to understand what the technology innovation strategy that underlies actually meeting such a mission. Could you tell us a little bit about the principles?
Sure. So really my three big principles about how we look at innovation, how we look at really technologies within the portfolios is, again, the clinical relevance, the technical feasibility, and the financial viability of that solution. I think if those three things come together, not only do you have a way to harness innovation at the lowest level from the deck plates all the way through, and you have a framework in which to do that, all right? So there's got to be some innovation compliance framework and standards that people can shoot to a target, that when I look at those clinical, technical, and financial viabilities that helps us weigh decisions and where we're going for the MHS, allows me to really orchestrate a better framework through governance and boards to allow people to be successful. Right. So if I know what I need to do to achieve where I want to be through checklists and templates and right and artifacts to drive innovation and or change management into the portfolio, that's the kind of things we're doing through our architectural governance board, through our engineering control board, and through our portfolio board to allow those innovations to come up in a streamlined manner that meets what we need to do from an HIT or a central transformation of portfolio.
So given the MHS carries on multiple and complex missions, its information technology requirements and portfolio reflect that complexity. And you're really the visionary, if you will, or the outward-facing technologist. Would you elaborate on your efforts to foster that enterprise view?
Sure. So not only internally with really a lot of the CMIOs or the CIOs, that's really the makeup of a lot of mine and some of the other business units that really drive the direct clinical, to have them come together in our governance boards, our HIT, our innovation boards, to allow those things to really be put on the table so we can look at what is strategically our objectives and how do we codify those into evidence-based decisions that allows us to put the palming on there, or the planning, right, for the financial out years or this year. And really, how could we reverse engineer those things to meet, right, where we want to be to create that puzzle piece that fits into that large city planning picture. And so we don't repeat that, right, so that we ensure that it's unique, it's necessary, and we can apply the proper really segments or strengths onto that puzzle piece to allow it to be put into the portfolio. That's internally. Externally, we work with a lot of external areas. I know we do stuff with Gartner, with Forrester, looking at reports, with our HEMS chapters, really garnering some of the health IT and innovations out there. The PCAST report from the President's Council, the 25 points, we did a lot of interaction there just at Georgetown or George Washington here last year about how we, the MHS, responded to the PCAS report, and we look at, you know, semantic data interoperability, right? So that's a big challenge across the nation is data and data conformance and standards to look at. When we do the mission that we do, a lot of our care is done out on town. And so if we don't have a good meta model in which we exchange information, and the lexicon becomes very important, right? So ASA equals aspirin, or does it, right? So if you don't have a universal translator there, that's going to be very challenging, right, and very time-consuming to ensure, again, the proper care was delivered to our patients and those entrusted to our care. Then we can consume that information back to us as the enterprise to take on if we need to do more extended care to our patients internally as well.
So how does all these efforts lead to a one connected enterprise? Can you give us a sense of how does all this come
Sure. I think through the governance, right, you start putting between the strategic planning. You put a framework about what the city's going to look like. Mm-hmm. Then you put the players and actors and episodes inside that to allow us to, again, I don't have to be a doctor to understand this is a requirement that needs to be fulfilled, right? Or though I don't need to be a gas worker to understand that I have to lay some gas lines here. So don't put the pavement down until we put the gas lines in and all the infrastructure necessary to allow that foundation to happen so we can build on to that. And so that's really kind of the bigger sequencing. And that goes back to, again, visualizing through the enterprise architecture and through long-range planning from our requirements or our IMs groups, our information managers, those things we need to tackle. And from our strategic planning initiatives from our senior leaders, what is necessary in which to meet the strategic goals and objectives.
And I'd like to delve into the enterprise governance aspect, and it's critical to the success of your efforts, and you've highlighted that. Well, I want to talk about what you've done to enhance MHS's technology governance process, and more particularly, how does a strong governance model enable you to optimize resources?
Sure. So when we look at governance and what we do, we look at the the technical tenets and foundations and standards that were necessary. It really provides a kind of a quantitative framework in which to say acceptable, unacceptable, right? Mm-hmm. Have already, don't have. So that we look at, again, ensuring that we're not duplicating efforts and activities, that we're complying with our not only internal directives and policies, but those of the larger Department of Defense. So we have alignment. Wherever we go operationally, we have alignment and we have standardization of our products and services as we fill those to our, our tri-service partners. So really, without that governance framework and without those standards and that interoperability, it's kind of hard to have uniformity on that. And so, again, through a lot of our compliance boards, we want to ensure that we're successful, we have speed to market, we have interoperability, and we have a standardized approach in which we do things. So pull down a build sheet. Here's a build sheet. Here's a requirement. These things are acceptable. The other things are not acceptable, or they might be waiverable. But we have mechanisms in which to do that more succinctly than we did before. And so it brings a lot of the pieces that were kind of fragmented now together in a very holistic manner so that, again, my one board A and B and C do not operate independently, but together, and they provide the relevance from each of their specialized knowledge areas to help initiate a transformation or satisfy a requirement that we have.
So from governance and the importance of governance to shaping a new architecture, systems architecture, I'd like to transition to that. And you've mentioned long-range architecture, LRA, for the enterprise. Would you tell us a little bit more about your efforts in this area? And more particularly, how does it seek, the LRA, to enable rapid, secure delivery and lifecycle support for IT?
So our long-range architecture plan is a culmination of the three services, plus our business owners internally to the MHS, TMA, to allow us to look at not only the technologies we have today in the field, measure their relevance to successfully meet the requirements of which they were fielded for, but to look to the evolution of where we're going tomorrow. And so when we look at stuff like mobile technology has been in our long-range architecture planning for the last few years, right? As we see a more mobile or quicker workforce, probably the need is gone to do a lot of heavy lifting in which to put the information or a mechanism to exchange information out to our customers both internally and externally. And I think you see a large shift with that with mobile delivery of content. So now sitting here from our command and control spots, we can hit globally all of our information areas that we need to deploy that capability. So when we look at the transformation of where the data is at, the authoritative sources, what is the mechanism to exchange that data, and how does that data get to said controlled devices to allow us to do that in accordance with our IAE policies and standards. So we derive a lot from really the net-centric approach of where DoD is going, then how we apply that to the MHS space, because when we look across the portfolio, we're the only healthcare delivery organization within the Department of Defense. Mm-hmm. Right, so it's a major activity that we have. But again, to ensure that we have speed of delivery, interoperability, we must ensure that we align to the larger Department of Defense when we do that. And same thing when we work with VA. We have a health architecture review board. I co-chair with the VA to ensure what we're doing for the IHR is both meaningful and useful and interoperable with our portfolios, because you have the Department of the, Veterans Affairs and Department of Defense, and we have to ensure that the things that the IPO will be doing will be interoperable onto our networks and services that our consumers can utilize. And so that's been a very good working relationship with the Interagency Program Office, very forward-leaning, and a huge amount of work they have to do to deliver.
I'd like to go back because you mentioned something, the net-centric approach of DoD. Could you elaborate a little bit on that?
So when we look at net-centric approach, again, all about the kind of the data, right? The right data to the right person at the right time. And so when we look at operations and we have a medical component that supplements a warfighter's need, really knowing where those assets are, what kind of assets are available to a combatant commander to make a mission decision is really the framework for some of that net-centric approach. So when we look at the big battle space, when you saw Tora Tora, mm-hmm. right, and they had the board and the admiral was asking for all the, where's all my ships and everything else, it's kind of the same visualization of that, but now in the 21st century, right, with a lot of proliferation of bits and bytes across there, then with a big wrapper about, fit for use, fit for purpose, so we ensure that we have the integrity of the data that's coming from a meaningful source and is protected data so we can accomplish our mission. So that's really the net-centric environment, the culmination of many, many smaller parts of the DoD that equal large data farm for them to make decisions on.
I'd like to transition to your efforts to enhance the military health system's decision support capabilities. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. One of the big things we did was created something called Dynamic Business Capability Mapping Model. So we pulled some of that from some MIT, their health application grid and their framework, and then we put our variables on there to really say what's important for the MHS, right? So each of those variables, right, could change, depends on, the sequencing of the strategies of where we want to go. And to look at our portfolio, not only today of what we have for the transformation we need to do to really start downsizing and start putting things together, but what are those products and services that we use that could be nurtured, that could be reutilized. And so we take a lot of the emotion out of that and really start looking at the applied science from those evidence-based reports to allow us to do our transition as we go forward with the MHS into a service-oriented enterprise, which thing should be, right, redone. Identity management is a perfect thing. Was one of our biggest things. I could create identity management 50 times, right, to 50 systems, or I could create it once or consume it from a authoritative source and then apply that to all the verticals and put that horizontal on top to allow, faster evolution, because if I've already signified that it is acceptable both from an IA, from a standards perspective, it plugs the puzzle piece into the larger picture, then there should be no reason why we shouldn't be reutilizing that service over and over again to meet the missions of that unique capability that's been deployed. And so that's really kind of how the evolution is we're going to a more services approached appointments. I've never seen a patient really not check in. So appointment could be a centralized service that we apply to a lot of different departments, cardiology, neurosurgery, right? So that's kind of the business and workflows we do. And that really helps us when we look at that again, not being a healthcare or from that business line, our architectural views for workflows and stuff really help us develop use cases mm-hmm. for a patient checks in. He does this or she does that. The next step is X, Y, and Z. It really helps us as a to visualize exactly what is necessary and which to really capture that requirement and translate that to an IT capability that could do that for us.
Yeah, I'd like to continue on this idea. You mentioned service-oriented enterprise. And what is that, and how does it differ from service-oriented architecture? And then, more importantly, what role does the SOE Governance Center play in making your vision a reality?
Sure. So I use SOE or SOA, kind of interoperable,
okay.
Right? We really say SOE because it really applies to the whole enterprise we're doing, right? So we have a large transformation across, because if you look at some of how our systems or our data interacts, it's either it's from the business side or it's the direct care side. But either or, there's a push-pull mechanism, right? So why wouldn't we do it on two, both our direct clinical care and our non-direct clinical care systems and capabilities? Kind of hard to see patients in a surgical manner without having our supplies to be able to do that mission. So everything's really tied together more or less. So that's why we said service-oriented enterprise. Plus, from a fiduciary responsibility, there's no reason to continue with the way we were doing business before when we can create services to allow a lot of these systems to be, speed to market and interoperable with the larger enterprise that we are. Our Governor Center really sets the kind of the foundation, because so our service-oriented enterprise or architecture is really first and foremost about the governance of that, right? So if you look at when you create all these services and you have, you know, an enterprise service bus acting as the concierge service to take messages and translate them or send them down or pick them up, that you really need the conductor. Because if not, then you don't know when the woodwinds and right comes in. So you really have to conduct that in a manner that you create harmony within the portfolio of all these services. Because now you're kind of dependent on one another for these services to be up and available for you to continue your mission and your job. And so that's the biggest thing with the SOE Governance Center, that we'll start doing the transformation from the governance to the actual, you know, IT through our test bedding and our dev test environments to allow these things to be what-ifed, to ensure they're meeting not only performance parameters, the IA parameters, but we're satisfying the requirements as well in a environment that emulates where we're going to be deploying these products and services to. So we call that the sand bedding. So there's a couple few areas of that, but it is an evolution to the end state of where we're going from an architecture standpoint. So it might be light in the front, but as you go and graduate through those areas, it becomes more and more codified to where you're going to deploy that out and how you interact with the other systems. A lot of the times in the past, people delivered products and services, but when we put them out, they didn't play well with each other, right? So this really helps us formulate, run, and to ensure that we, the DoD, and we, the MHS, are getting our money's worth, that we ensure that the interoperability is present, and that we understand how those things interact with each other. So that's really why we're doing a lot of service-oriented enterprise, not only from a compliance and a reusability, but really from a fiduciary responsibility. As we go more and more light, lighter footprints, I don't need a big server farm, I don't need this and that, because again, when I look at platforms as a service, software and infrastructure as a service, you don't have two water companies, yeah, right? Supply your house, you have one. So it really helps standardize on the utility of that organization that we have, our cybersecurity information service that we have, as the owners of a lot of the infrastructure components, so they can ensure through capacity planning, some other checks and balances, that adding 18 more houses on the street is not going to disrupt the 30 houses that are already on that street, right? So we can continue to care and deliver what we need to do to support the mission.
What is MHS doing to cultivate controlled innovation that supports the delivery of healthcare? We will ask Mark Ouge, Chief Technology Officer at MHS, when our conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour. The IBM Center for the Business of Government has recently published Governing to Win, Enhancing National Competitiveness Through New Policy and Operating Approaches, edited by Chuck Pro, which brings together insightful essays by leading thinkers and practitioners that offer a long-term strategy to improve national competitiveness. How can our nation better compete in today's global economy? And how can moving to an enterprise USA approach in government enhance our national competitiveness? This book explores these questions and so much more. Governing to Win is available at bookstores, online booksellers, and from the publisher, RomanLittlefield.com. Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host, and our guest today is Mark Ouge, Chief Technology Officer at the U.S. Department of Defense's Military Health System. So, Mark, could you tell us a little bit more about the MHS's innovation program and efforts to implement an innovation portfolio?
Absolutely. So we have our senior leadership has designated an innovation officer to allow that activity to be led. So not only an idea that might spur, but maybe an IT enabling capability. So it's kind of how we interact between the innovation office and then really what we need to do to that applied space or that idea. If it requires a technology, that we start developing an innovation office that allows us to look at the onboarding, the complexity, the conformity of that potential IT product or service that goes into our portfolio, and then create from that the innovation library. Right, so we're starting looking at the MHS like medical mart, right, for reusable products and services, a toolkit, so that people can look at and go shopping. Says, hey, I got an idea about, boom. It does not mean that they need to recreate the wheel on this one, right? So if I have a component that's already been built for one use, there's really little to no reason that I need to rebuild that when I want to put different business logic in that. So it might be I used to go to Y, right, with this product, but I want to go to Z, right? Refactoring that and putting new business logic through coding and stuff into a framework that's already been approved and right, as a standardized approach to that is really easier for us to look at, again, fielding that capability. And if you look at some of the stuff that we're doing, like an app store, so that our clinical providers and those business owners, when we start developing more and more business apps, can rate the stars on it, right? So it doesn't take away from anybody's ability if you want to sit at your house to take that toolkit to start building something that might be of use to the MHS, right? That's kind of what we want, innovation to be spurred from all around, but still have a target in which to land.
Is it sort of the controlled innovation?
Yeah, controlled, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Because, I mean, without control, then you just have chaos, right? You have innovation and chaos. So, I mean, if you look at the World Wide Web, it's kind of chaotic to a point, right? To a point where, you know, I'll let these certain protocols run the web, right? And the IEEE has set a standard for that, the engineering, the international engineering community. But that allows the quick adoption. If you look at how fast the internet was adopted, it was kind of simple, right? It only took a couple ports or protocols in which to do that and relative easy lift for that. And it went huge and quickly, and everybody knew how to utilize it. And so that's kind of what we want, take a lot of the IT-ness out of that, right, and really work on the human interaction between that capability and what data you're going to get out of that and what kind of interaction that you're going to have with that. And so it could be either centralized, it could be disconnected. I built something for somebody when we look at like PTSD or mood tracker for some of the T2 guys have put out. It's done a wonderful job. Disconnected mode, I can sit there and now if how I feel, I can capture that. And when I come back into the MTF or to my, you know, my care provider, I can share that information that I've captured over the last month or last week with him or her to have a better interaction for healthcare.
So what is the Innovation Alliance and how does that factor into your efforts?
Sure. The Innovation Alliance, again, a large part of that is ensuring that we have a lot of the people necessary for the change, not only from the senior leadership, so we all have that board or that alliance to allow each of those members from our services, from internal and headquarter, at the highest levels, down the lowest level, have a place in which to look at the rack and stacking of all this innovation and innovation areas that we like to either apply research funding to answer a question or look at a problem state in the next couple of years, or look at today where we're at with our portfolio and portfolio services. Is there a better innovative way? And usually the people at the deck plate will let you know if there's something wrong, that there's a way to help enable better care. You know, and that's what I kind of love about being in this space, because everybody's a care provider first and foremost, and they really take on those entrusted to our care is a very serious statement, as I do, because it is a lot of trust. So when you're someplace overseas, the last thing you really want to worry about is my family being taken care of, right? So again, they have their mission, we have ours, and I think we both do it very, very well, and I'm proud to be over the organization. So as we get there, we want to ensure that those people have a mechanism and an avenue in which to take that idea and proliferate that to us at the central office.
And does the call for innovations initiative factor into this as well?
Yeah, there's been several calls for innovation, and when we looked at strategic planning for diabetes, right? So some of our weight loss and some of the other areas that the innovation officer is applying to the strategic planning that we have facing us, and not only facing us but facing the nation as we get an older population, right? And diabetes is on the forefront of some of those areas. So we're looking at that and innovative ways in which to do that, right? And so that's come up to the council. We've had a few visits already with a lot of the stakeholders to look at ways not only could we apply IT to that, but how could we change policy in order the way we care for our patients.
Using your CTO hat, is there a way to sort of assess the maturation of innovation within an organization?
Yeah, there is. We have an onboarding process. I wouldn't say it's complex, but we use a lot of stuff, you know, from our industry partners about innovation, the hype cycles, to look at when is the best place to apply that. And is it too early or is it kind of too late? Maybe we should be looking at something differently to allow that innovation to happen. Maybe we apply, let's say, HTML5 that allows us to do more mobile than typical HTML4. So that's just it's on the hype cycle. That's just a way to look at some of the enabling capabilities that might be able to help transform today and take us to mobile tomorrow. So maybe the thought was get the data, and I'm thinking centrally, but maybe tomorrow I think, wow, this really worked well. How do I get it, the outreach program to patients out there so they can have the mobile media and have the data on there in a protected manner? So that's kind of what we look at for some of the IT enablers, and then tease that out. And it really helps with the innovation area to think those things through from kind of a multifaceted area of subject matter experts to really place the best capability or the best innovation design or idea out into the enterprise as a whole.
So Congress directed the DoD and VA to undertake a cooperative effort to establish the integrated electronic health record. Would you tell us more about this effort and your efforts to integrate the EHR?
Sure. So I currently serve as the chief architect at the IPO, their Integrated Program Office, to help with that, to bring the VA and DoD into a conformance of a common area that the IPO has to kind of deliver to, and really look at, you know, how will we develop not only the network space and what just shared architecture lives in, to both the .mil and to a .gov area. So looking at those challenges to bring those things together. And then, again, with our Health Architecture Review Board is just one evolution to allow us to have a place in which we say meeting the mission needs of both agencies in a common shared way in a platform of services. One thing we've done is take in a reusable product and service we use is our application, our virtualized hosting environment. So when we look at cloud, it's platform as a service. So they can start looking at putting more applications and services onto that framework to rapidly build out that computing platform in a manner that, again, meets the needs. That is, again, the fiduciary responsibility so that not everybody needs their own. You're bringing a shared space down there. And then securing that with a framework to allow both agencies to feel comfortable with what we do for our checks and balances as we start looking at delivering care to not only the internal .mil, but to the veterans as well.
How does this relate to, or how do you support DoD VA synchronization? Is this sort of what that is?
Yeah, it is. It actually is. One of the big things we looked at synchronizing when we talk about the data model, mm-hmm. coming up with a common data model so we have better semantic interoperability between systems and systems exchanges as we do the shared space. So I always say that, you know, the most important person on the Star Trek was Lieutenant Uhura, right? Because if not, it would be kind of boring with went to a planet, didn't know what they said. Went to another planet, didn't know what it said, right? So I don't think they'd be on for as many seasons as they did if they didn't have a translator there to help with that. And that's really, when we look at the data level all the way through, it is all about the data. And the reusability of there, we've seen a lot of commonality that we, the Department of Defense and the MHS and the Department of Veterans Affairs do together. We used a healthcare model, the HL7 model, to really look and say, do you give shots this way? Do you treat patients like this? And the answer fundamentally in a high percentage was yes, absolutely we do. Now we have some unique stuff and they have some unique stuff like long-term care veterans do. And we have our war fighting, right, that we do. But when it comes down to it, the majority of stuff we do together. And a lot of products and services we've both been working on, we're looking at sharing those together. We've already brought a lot of things on the table from a common user interface to allow that to happen wherever you're at. You know, the look and feel and the adjustability of that user interface, very important to our clinicians, because what a cardiologist might want to see, maybe a nephrologist doesn't, right? So it allows you to really manipulate that screen in a standard manner, right, for compliance, conformity. If you want the button to the left or button to the right, that's your call, right? But when you press that button, it will work, and it will pull the data that you've requested.
Is there a target time frame for realizing this IEHR?
Yeah, they're looking at 2017. So there are increments and there's deliverables for those increments as we look at our lines of business that we're going to be put out jointly, lab, immunization, pharmacy. We're going to be hitting the San Antonio and the Portsmouth areas with and retrofitting some stuff up at Great Lakes to look at deploying those capabilities in a platform in a shared space so that both areas and both organizations, departments can utilize that data feed to treat those patients wherever they're at.
So, Mark, I understand that you're the co-chair for the Health Information Technology Innovation and Development Environments, or HITID. Could you tell us a little bit about the purpose of this group and more particularly, what are some of the activities and what remains to be done?
Sure. So the HITID stand up underneath the National Science Foundation. So they sponsor a lot of things. And then Dr. Rosendale from the VA was a big proponent of really the need to have a health information technology underneath the NSF, and they've really really helped us along to look at that. So we have FDA, NIST, right, HHS, ONC, a lot of the people and organizations that we have like problems potentially, right, in that shared space, that forum and that quorum allows us to share ideas, to look at problem spaces, to figure out how we might address that both from industry and from internal, to really provide more, I think, transparency about what are the challenges of health information technologies, or where we're going to. And so it's been a very interactive meeting with all those participants. And we're really fledgling, getting off the ground on that. But again, early and upfront, it's producing a lot of promises because of a lot of the, again, transparency and communication. Like, yeah, I have that problem too. Right. Yeah, I read that in the PCAST report as well. And right, I do think semantic interoperability is very important to the transformation and meaningful use of that data in my space as well. So how could we do that? And so when we look at some of those problem spaces, maybe John Hopkins is better at this one. Maybe Harvard's better at that one. Maybe right, FDA, NIST, and you know, some of those compliance and mandate offices can help that pull that information back so we look at a better way to transform where we want to be with health information and health information technologies.
Yeah, and I'd like to pick up on that customer satisfaction. What are you doing to enhance that among internal and external customers of your office?
Sure. So from internal, we do customer satisfaction about what we do for that. Same thing with our external customers. We capture those, right? They ask, and that's really led by a lot of our central office that does that. But when we do our after actions with upgrades to our products and services, right, we either sometimes physically go out to the site, do a check and balance with the customers, meet with them. And that's really a lot of our program offices do that, or they set up like a university type of thing and bring the people there before they have a next major evolution of that, right, to ensure that we are not only meeting today's requirements, that we're fulfilling the need for the customer to exchange data with a computer platform. So that's kind of how we do it today, right?
What does the future hold for technology within DoD's military health system? We will ask Mark Gooch, Chief Technology Officer at MHS, when our conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour. The IBM Center for the Business of Government has recently published Governing to Win, Enhancing National Competitiveness Through New Policy and Operating Approaches, edited by Chuck Pro, which brings together insightful essays by leading thinkers and practitioners that offer a long-term strategy to improve national competitiveness. How can our nation better compete in today's global economy? And how can moving to an enterprise USA approach in government enhance our national competitiveness? This book explores these questions and so much more. Governing to Win is available at bookstores, online booksellers, and from the publisher, RomanLittlefield.com. Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host, and our guest today is Mark Gooch, Chief Technology Officer at the U.S. Department of Defense's Military Health System. So, Mark, I have the pleasure of talking to many of my guests about collaboration and partnerships between the agencies, federal, state, local, and public sector to achieve mission results. Would you tell us a little bit about how you're leveraging partnerships or collaborating with others? And how can collaboration or partnerships enhance innovation?
Sure. I think as we talk and we look at some of the things that we're doing with the FDA, mm-hmm. right, with NIST and some of the panels I've been on with, Todd Park and Farzad, right? So there's a lot of, again, when we look at the big plan and the big things we're doing, when we start shrinking that down and we look at healthcare, then we look at our space a little bit smaller, right, that the finite differences are really that, finite differences. So what I can gain from compliance of FDA-controlled devices and machines into an operational area that I have, or how does that fit onto the network when we look at IA controls, I really look to some of the FDA and some of the NIST to help inform what we need to do for our transformation. So that collaboration both ways really helps us out as an organization, as a whole, as an industry as a whole. And lessons learned from, the Cleveland Clinics, the John Hopkins, the George Washingtons, Baylor, and some of the things that we do with other partners out there for, like I said, research products, which allows us to have better, right, like questions answered for us to help us to be more innovative and collaborative in what we look at for our trade space. Again, if the question is going to be answered, then I don't need to spend my time on that. I can look at another question that's being posed by another area and really figure out which way to put it to the right expertise if we can't answer that internally. So that's really a lot of our roles, and you know, that's a big thing with the high tide. It allows us to meet a lot of those groups or individuals or organizations in which we have that kind of shared space of maybe problems or innovations or something we want to get answered, right? So we have a more transparency on sharing a lot of the information that we have, and then some joint labbing. So we can look at, hey, I have the kind of same thing. Could we look at sharing some of our dev test environments to allow us to look at a closer, you know, technical collaboration of that? So that's all, you know, coming to fruition or in process now. There are some pieces that still need to be worked out, mostly paperwork, you know, go figure. But, you know, that's the nature of the beast. But those really are, those transformational elements really help us, again, work with our partners and work with those people in our academia that really help us do healthcare, not only great today, but better tomorrow.
So given the critical importance technology plays in mission and program delivery, what about the role of the chief technologist? How will it continue to evolve? And could you give us a sense of some of the important characteristics of a successful CTO?
Okay. So I think as we live in the information world, I don't see the CTO's role slowing down at all. I think orchestrating a lot of those and putting those bridges between our consumers, customers, both internal and external, to the technologists who drive that, I really see the wall being, or the bridge being, more and more transparent as we grow a younger generation who's more technically inclined, that the challenges they'll want for information instantly will really drive the way that we kind of deploy technology, look at data, and look at the transformation of that data. So I see the role becoming, hopefully, in a more standardized approach, a more common, right? So we really have to get common on common, right? Standard on standards. So we have a better exchange through known avenues. And I think from the technologist and from a CTO, really putting out that city planning, the visualization of that, ensuring that you have all the characters, roles, and actors in place, and that you sequence that, right? So I think you got to be part architect, part engineer, but really the biggest part is really knowing the space that you're in. Because, again, you wouldn't be meaningful and useful unless you actually knew, you know, what you're in. And so, again, the benefit I had growing up, my whole adult life being in health care and then healthcare IT, I tend to know my space pretty well. At least I think I do. But that is really, I think, the transformation of a lot of CTOs, that find a career that you love, right? Not a job, a career that you love, and then turn it into a job, right? So that you're passionate about it, because passion will drive you a lot of times to stay those extra hours, to do this, that, and the other, to really humble yourself to say, I've got it pretty good. I go home tonight, right? I could be the guy out there, you know, staying on the watch, who's 2,000 miles away from his family, who doesn't have that luxury. So, you know, dig a little bit internal to really, you know, lean forward a little bit more. And I think if you're passionate about what you do, you're going to be very successful in whatever you do, whether you're a CTO or not, and have the ability to understand, communicate, and really evolve and know when wrong's wrong and be able to admit that, right? So, you know, it's kind of hard sometimes, but that's a natural evolution in a very dynamic, changing environment that we are in. IT and IT delivery and healthcare, new challenges come at you daily, and really you have to, you know, take a step back, look at the evidence, and make a practical approach for recommendations for our senior leaders to go forward with to meet the mission.
Well, speaking about knowing your space and going forward, I'd like you to put your sort of futuristic hat on and give us a sense of some of the major opportunities and challenges your organization will encounter in the future, and how do you think it will evolve to meet them?
So I think from the opportunities, when we look at large information delivery mechanism that we do so much with outside, 60% of our care is done with outside. We've taken some steps on that to look at putting our health data dictionary, right, out into an open source so that other people can gain the knowledge that we have from our our years of service and our mappings. So we have a semantic data model, right? It's got 2.5 million mappings, right? Some of those things that you wouldn't normally see inside a civilian sector, but we see in the military. So I think when we look at, I'm going to say data evolution, revolution, that you're going to see here in the next couple of years, right, as we get more and